go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 88 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. Ooh, who is that? You're going to come say hello? You want to come say hello to the crowd? Come on. Come on, Daisy. Come on. I'll put you up. Come on. Come up on my arms. Come on. Ooh, ooh, ooh. We have a new guest to the show, Verbal Graffiti. This is Daisy May. She kind of grunts like a pig. So if you hear this episode, that is a Daisy just kind of sniffing food in the background. Aw, Daisy. I think this is maybe the third guest host we've had this episode. We also have, if you're a fan of Verbal Graffiti, we have Willow sleeping on a blanket beyond the camera. She's doing the editing for this episode. Oh, you're going to go down or you want to stay up? You want to go down? All right, you can go down. All right, well, she might be back. She's looking at me like she might come back on camera. Let's continue the episode. She's so much more adorable than I'll ever be, even though I do wear a bandana on my neck. All right, we are in the Christmas season, so I want to show you something I own. This is the 1995 Chromium, a November 1956 cover of the Playboy magazine. This is a sports card of that replica, of that cover, first edition. This is November card, but it is the December picture of people in an elevator shopping Christmas. When that was a thing, when you actually had to go outside to stores, malls, shopping centers to find presents for your loved ones and your friends and your mistresses. So I have that. I think I might have bought that for, I have no idea. It might be $40, $50. It's a PSA 10, which means it's supposed to be a perfect card, no blemishes to it. But if you get it at a certain angle, there is a little indent behind the guy. I love early Playboy magazines. Not the magazines themselves, but the covers. Because a lot of them will have the bunny instead of it, like an actual floozy on the cover. It's more cartoonish, animated. That's why I buy a lot of these. Have that. We have the Santa Claus gnome. He has no name, no addition to him, but it's a season. We're trying to be festive. I also the B-Man. I was road running yesterday, maybe 2 days ago, and there was found a quarter on the ground, on the pavement, and I looked at it, and I thought, should I pick this up? With inflation, how much is a quarter worth? And does that make me a Jew, picking up a quarter? Can I use that word, Jew? Is that it? That's a slur, but dude, if you want to consider me, like, I wish I had that, what do they call it? That stereotype where you're cheap and you're worth money and you take every quarter off the ground you can. Put that slur on me because I'd love to have it. A quarter to me, when I was a kid, this could get me some candy at the candy store. It could get me some gum, those fake cigarette candies. So a nickel, a dime, I won't pick up. But if it's a quarter, the B-Man, I'm going to pick it up. And if you do that thing where you super glue it to the ground and you have the camera and you get the camera on me trying to pick it up and then everyone comes out and laughs at me for trying to pick up a quarter, well, hey, you got me. But this time, I got you. I got the quarter. I'll put that right there. Where shall we begin? All right, Daisy's behind me somewhere. All right. Exclamation points. Is that how you pronounce it? Yes. That's a tough word for the B-Man to say. Now it's in my head. You ever think of a word that you know how to pronounce it, you're pretty sure, but then you start thinking about how to actually pronounce it, so you try to enunciate it more proficiently, but then it doesn't come out, and then your exclamation point. Yeah. So you have those exclamation points, you know, the line with the dot. And as you all know, I work corporate America. I'm not like upper corporate. I'm more entry level, you know, could barely pay my rent, but I'm not going to bitch about it. But that's where I am. And, you know, I have to send emails throughout the days. We have Teams. If you know what Teams is, you know what Teams is. A lot of messaging each other. So at the end of every message and email, everyone puts an exclamation point, because that's what you do in corporate America. A communication via written or typed word on email, Teams, whatever it may be. And I'm against it, because I'm not happy when I'm at work. I'm working for the man. I have an hourly wage. I do not want to be there when I am signed in. So I am not going to give you an exclamation mark. Like, when you send me an email ripping into me about how did you do this? How come you did this thing wrong? How come you didn't send this email to that team to warn them that they need to do this assignment? And then I'm supposed to, oh, my apologies, I messed up, exclamation point. Thank you for pointing that out. No, I'm just going to type from now on, thank you for informing me. I'll try to do better next time. Or when someone sends me an email request saying, hey, we're going to have a team meeting Thursday afternoon. What do you think? I'm like, okay, have the meeting. No exclamation point. I am done with those. Because I'm lying to my coworkers if I put that. So no longer will I do so. I'm going to end all my sentences with periods. There will be no... I think, what's his name? Louis C.K. He has a whole bit about the exclamation point and how younger people have just bastardized it. Wow, I am not speaking well today. So let's just move into something I found on Reddit. Comes from, actually, I picked this one up in November. That's why, if you know, you know. What's it, NoFap November or no, whatever it is, you're not supposed to orgasm in November, but now we're into December. But I got this one from the subreddit NoFap. A porn addicted girl. Porn addiction. I can't stop masturbating and using the vibrator for hours. I've been edging myself and watching porn for 8 hours, 3 days straight. That's 24 hours in 3 days. A very little sleep and even hurting myself. I don't know, WTF, what the fuck is wrong with me? It's like I completely changed into a different person and I can't stop. I think differently and it's totally disgusting when the orgasm is gone. I don't want to keep doing this. It feels almost like something is controlling me to do this for my downfall. And it's the porn that makes me keep going and going. And I take hours collecting bunch of videos to use them. And I don't even get tired, hungry, or go to the bathroom. How can I stop? I've been watching porn since a very young age, so it makes sense why I'm so bonded to it now. But I've never got the urge so bad to be sleep deprived and hurting myself like this for days. All right, so you're a porn addicted babe. What concerns me about you is not your addiction to porn, but rather your mindset you have towards the addiction to the smut you claim to have. And I do think you have an addiction. 8 hours a day, three straight days. You're watching a lot of smut. You're watching a lot of that. So we need to change your mindset. Let's recalibrate your mind. Let me start off by asking you this. What else would you be if not for the porn? Would you be one of America's great next author in the world? Would you be Charles Dickens or Tim O'Brien? Would you be the next Steve Jobs? Would you be an Olympian? Would you be a classical pianist? No. You're not going to be any of these. You're a porn gal. That's Like the peak of your life outside of watching porn late at night, starving yourself, outside of that world, the rest of your world, what is your peak going to be? It's probably going to consist of, and this is like 100%, like you reach the 99th percentile of what your life could be. You're probably going to be driving a Mercedes and have two kids that you send off to state college because you can't afford a private school. And is that really what you want to give up the smut for? I don't think it is. I read this. It's almost like I could have written this because I am an edger. I like to edge. There are many a night, not as many as there used to be, but I still have these nights where I'll open up my... First of all, you know you're a porn guy. You know you're a lover of the smut. If you own two laptops, one for your work and personal use and another one that you use purely for the smut. And the B-man, that's what I am. I have two laptops. So my second one, my nefarious laptop, I open it up late at night. I'll use a sexyporn.com. That's sexyporn without the vowels .com. That has all the Pornhub videos, but the full length. Like the full length scene. So it will have like the 25 to 40 minute scene. Pornhub, you're lucky if you get a 7 minute scene. So I'll open up. I'll be like this, babe. I will have maybe 20 tabs open and I'll go from one video to the next and I'll kind of skip through it. And when you're an edger, right? When you're a porn addict, you can get through videos very quickly and find the scene you want. And the reason why I have all these tabs open, I have all, you know, this busty Latina, this whore Asian, this backpacker on the bang bus. I have them all open, all genres, they're all busty, some with pubic hair, some with not. That's here nor there, but I have these tabs open, sometimes 15, 20, sometimes I'll erase them all and start all over. And I start, and each video, scene, I'll fast forward, I'll get to the scene, the best part of that scene, if there is one. If there's not, I just poke it, just exit out and open up a new one, but I will find the best scene. But I don't want to give my nut to that scene because there might be a better one. Because if I look at the first one, I have 19 others. So there might be a better scene to get my nut to within those next 19 videos. So I'll go to the second video and I'll compare the best scene in the second video to the first. And then I'll go to the third video and I'll see if there's a better scene in the third one compared to the first two, so on and so on. So by the time I get to the 20th video, yeah, sometimes it takes 3 or 4 hours. Usually I will cut off my porn watching if dawn comes. And once I see the sun, not the sun, but where it goes from black to like that dark navy blue, that's, to me, that's the red alert danger sign. It's like, okay, B-man, get your nut, find your scene. And sometimes I'll go back to, it won't even be one to 20 videos. Like I'll open up, if you're a porn person, you have 10 scenes that are always in your head. So I'll go to one of those where I know where to get it and I'll nut to that. And I'm using, maybe nut's too abrasive of a word. Maybe I should use, I'll goo to it. I'll just shoot my goo out to it. So I know where this porn addicted babe, I am her. She is me. We are in unison together. So I do know the struggle. But it's not... I've learned over the years, there was a long period of my life, and I'm talking about myself because I think it could help you if you're one of these people, where I was in the same mindset as this lady with this Reddit post, this babe, where I was disgusted with myself, where I would watch porn for hours at a time. I would get myself hard, Mr. Perfect, that is, and I would get right, like close to getting that goo, like right towards the tip. Then I would stop, wait a few minutes, let myself get soft. you know, get my breath back, and then I'd start revving it up again. And I do that for hours where I would just, my dick would become raw. And like, there is a part on my wiener where it has like a hand mark. Because there was a while there where I had a death grip. I don't have that problem anymore. I'm growing as a person and as a porn consumer. So, But there were some, yeah, I was like, you're like, dude, I started at 11 p.m. It is now 3:30 a.m. This is 4 hours of me doing this. Like, what? What am I doing? Like, I could have gotten my goo done and out in 15 minutes. I could have been asleep for 2.5 hours right now. Yeah, I know that mindset. I've been there. I was there for years, decades even. But there was, I had a switch, and it came, when did this switch come on? It might have been post-COVID, so maybe 2021, 2022, I'm in the middle of an edge session, and I knew which one I was going to nut to, but it was too, so that's another thing about edging that is a little... As an edger, that's frustrating. Like, you'll find the scene very early in your session. And it'll be within the first half hour edging. You'll find the scene. Wow, that is the one. I have not seen the angle or the noises being made or the facial expression like that. That you know. Like, I know. I'm gonna get my goo to that scene. But I've only been edging for 20 minutes. And that's way too early for me to nut. So then I spend... That's the worst part of being an edger is that the 2 hours excess when you know you're not going to find a scene to live up to that one you found in the first 20 minutes. So that is a waste of 2 hours. But what I'm getting at, there was a point, 2022-ish year, where I discovered, no, that's not disgusting. Like at my peak... At the peak of B-Man, at my purest, that is who I am. When I am in the middle of edging myself for hours at a time, alone in my bedroom, when I'm getting it hard, getting it soft, getting it hard, letting it get soft. That up and down, that rhythm that you get into when you're edging, that's the closest I'll ever get to Nirvana. That is the happiest I ever am. That is the most... fulfilling sense of personhood I have is when I'm edging. And that's who you are too. Like you gotta, that is how you gotta recalibrate your mind. You're being disgusted with yourself when you're edging. When you're just jackhammering yourself with that vibrator that you bought off of Adam and Eve, and you're just grinding away, gnawing away at all those nerve endings you have on your clit, and you're just and then you orgasm, and you have that orgasm, but then you come to light, you have that post nut clarity, and in that clarity, that you're disgusted with yourself. The person you were when you were edging, but you got to reverse it and realize, no, the post-nut clarity, when all when all the gutter thoughts are out of your mind, that's the person you have to be disgusted with. The post-nut clarity you, that is the disgusting person. The one who's edging, just vibrating the F out of your clit, that's the person you have to be proud of. That is the real you. It took me decades to do that 180 switch. It's almost like being like in politics and going from left to right or vice versa. That's what you have to do with your mind. That post-nut clarity of you, when you're laying in bed and you're looking down at yourself and you put the vibrator to the side and you look at your clock and it's you know, it's 7:45 a.m. and you start at midnight. So this is 7+ hours you're doing it. Like that... Who's that? Oasis. Like, never look back. Whatever that song lyric is, like, don't look back. Who you are when that vibrator is by your side. When you're done, When you've gotten that orgasm, when you're lying in bed, that's the disgusting person. But when you were edging, you were being active. You were being proactive. You were making yourself feel good. You were fulfilling your soul and your feels. That's the real you. So embrace that. Love it. Be one with it. Like we, you and me, we're a different creed than most porn consumers. See, a lot, most... If you're a scrupulous viewer of porn, you'll realize if you go to Pornhub, which I refer to as the Disney of smut. It's the most PC porn you can find on the internet. But you go to that first page, and like I said, if you're a scrupulous viewer of porn, you'll realize all those videos on the first page of Pornhub, they're all fewer than 5 minutes, and many of those videos... there's this new thing in porn where both the actors, actresses, they don't show their face. So it's from chest downward. You never see the face. You never see the facial expressions. It's just the bodies bumping into each other or rubbing on each other. And you'll look and see how many views is this getting? This video is trash. Like, I need to see face. And you'll see, oh, it has 5 million views. And then you start doing the math. Wait, there are 5 million people in this world who are getting their orgasm to this 5-minute faceless video. Those are the consumers we all need to be disgusted with, because they don't respect their orgasm. They're willing to get their orgasm to any video. And you and me, who are porn lovers, nah, we are not Pornhub first page viewers. We are connoisseurs of porn. We have too much respect for our own body, our own orgasms, to give it out to first page Pornhub. Now, we go deep. We go on the sites that might give our computer malware, whatever the fuck that is. So you just gotta embrace who you are and what it is you love. Again, switch the mind. But yeah, you are wasting your life. But your life is a waste. Like, you're not gonna be remembered. There's no legacy with you. You're posting on Reddit after watching 24 hours of smut in a 3-day period. So just love yourself. Continue edging. It's a wonderful journey you're on. I'm on it with you. And find that perfect scene. And just try to, finish up before dawn hits. Let's go look at some photos. Episode 88, segment 2. Willow has decided she wants some FaceTime on the camera. She's in my lap. She is the prototypical lap dog. As soon as you take a seat, she'll jump up on top of you, kind of do a few laps around your lap, find her spot, and plop down and lay there, lick your hand a little bit, and she'll stay there all afternoon. If you have a huge bladder and don't have to pee much, she would be in love with you. Me, I pee a lot, so she gets very aggravated. I'm always getting up every half hour or so to pee. But that's enough about my peeing schedule and enough about Willow. Let's move the episode, the smut humor, along. I was watching football this past weekend, college football, that is, because I am an all-American bro. I did start JV basketball my senior year of high school. My junior year of high school. Senior year, I rode the bench, because when you're a senior in Connecticut, you're not allowed to play JV sports, so I was on the varsity team, but I never got any playing time. Enough about my high school sports glory. But yeah, I was watching college football, and now that there's NIL, if you don't know what that is, that's college teams are now legally allowed to pay the players, the students that play for them. The typical big-time schools, the Ohio States, the Clemson, Notre Dame, LSU, Bama, Georgia, where where is Harvard now? Because I'm watching these sports. I know I love college football. NIL, you're allowed to pay the students. Well, what school has the most money? It's Harvard, and I think number two might be Yale. They have the largest endowment. I don't know if this stat is correct, because I'll read things on X without, and I'll just take it as fact and not do the research, because that's what Americans do these days. But I did see this stat that Harvard, they have so much money in their endowment that they could pay the tuition for every incoming student to Harvard for the next 100 years. Now, if you have that kind of money, why don't we pony up some money for the Harvard football team? What are they? What's their mascot? Whatever it is, they, you know, they have all these hedge funds and all these ex-presidents are from Harvard and Yale. Why don't these Ivy League schools put some money where it can actually go to some use? College sports. I want Harvard within the next 5 years to be the powerhouse of football. Take some of that money, push your chips in the middle, and play big boy poker. Big boy scouting, recruiting. Go out there, Florida, Louisiana, Deep Texas, South California, Middle not Tennessee. Well, maybe Tennessee. I was thinking more Middle Pennsylvania. Go get some talent. Go get some receivers and compete for a national championship. There's got to be who are some famous? There are billionaires that go to Harvard. Sorry, they go to Harvard, become billionaires. What's his name? Zuckerberg, that nerd from Facebook. Why doesn't he give a few bill and prop up Harvard football and turn it into the powerhouse it could be? You have all that money. Why is it wasting in the endowment? Go get some players and go fight Alabama and Georgia and whoever the fuck is fighting for national titles in the upcoming years. It just seems like a waste. It's such a waste of money not to be competing in the number two sport in America, which is college football. So that is my, what is that? I'm not going to be on a street corner with a hey, will you sign my pledge to try to get Harvard to spend their money on their football team with a clipboard? Sometimes you'll see those in New York City. I don't care about it that much, but I do care about it enough to just be talking shit about it on Verbal Graffiti. But yeah, Harvard, Yale, Brown, UPenn, come on, Princeton, let's go. Get your football team. Get it up to snuff. Go get in the trenches. Fight those Alabama, the Crimson Tide. Go get that title. I went to UConn. I went to a state school. I don't know why I'm rooting for Harvard, but it would be fun to see these egghead nerds, dweebs in the lab coats from these prestigious universities come and swing their big Ivy League dicks in the prototypical bro athletic schools down south and Midwest. Like I think that'd be kind of funny. It'd be a fun change of pace. That's probably never going to happen. So let's move on. Like I said, Willow, very much a lap loving dog. All right. Found this on the subreddit Dadits. That's for dads, I believe. I understand why my grandpa was an alcoholic. Oh, do you now? Different kind of post. Not sure if it's allowed. Let's say it is allowed. My grandpa was an alcoholic, never laid a hand on his wife or kids, but drank himself into an early grave for his family of five children. He did back-breaking labor as a coal miner, got home from work to help his wife put their kids to bed, and once everyone was taken care of, drank himself to sleep day in, day out. Fast forward, Now I have a 5, 3, 1-year-old, and man, the days are brutal. I'm slipping into the same trap of beers going down too easy to push away how I'm really feeling. Help to unwind to be able to give it my all the next day. Rinse and repeat. Be careful, dads. Life is tough. It'll take you with it if you let it. There is this, this post reminds me, there's this subgroup of people that I have admiration for this type of person. Maybe admiration is the wrong word, but I am certainly in awe of this type of person. And the type of person I'm thinking of is if you go to a package store, and now that's what we call them here in Connecticut. Anywhere else in the country, they probably call them liquor stores or maybe your local gas station. If you go to wherever they sell liquor and beer, between 3 p.m. and 5 p.m., if you're there, you'll notice, you'll see a lot of guys coming in. The blue-collar guys with their neon green, yellow t-shirts. They'll have the worn-out jeans with specks of paint on them. They'll be wearing steel-toe boots that has, cement stuck on it. And you know what I'm talking about. It's a blue-collar guy where he has calluses on his hand that he could break, that he could squeeze and break a brick. That's how strong his grip is. He's just a manly man. He's got the scruff. He's got a little bit of... He's got a little BO to him, but it's not annoying BO body odor because you know he's just put in a hard day's work. So how are you going to bitch about, he's making the road for you. You're really going to bitch about his pitch stinking a little bit while you're trying to buy a 12-pack of Busch Light at 4 p.m.? No, you're not. You're not going to admire him, but you're going to be awe of him. Now, you'll see this type of person. And they're at every package store, every liquor store in the country between 3 and 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday, maybe Friday if they work on Fridays as well. But they'll be buying nips of whiskey and Fireball or maybe a case of beer. And I always look at that person, and it's in awe because I know that person's life. Not his life, but his schedule. He wakes up at 4:30, maybe 5 a.m., the latest. He's at work by 6 p.m. He's doing hard physical labor from 6 a.m. through 2:30 to 3 p.m. outside, banging the pavement, bricking the houses, doing the roofing, the piping, all the stuff that I don't know how to do, he's doing. And then immediately from there, he goes to the liquor store, the package store, gets his liquor, and starts drinking, drinks himself into a coma, probably falls asleep at 9:30 p.m., wakes up at 4:30 a.m. with a hangover, and then does it again. He's able to work physical labor, hand to the ground, to the earth, 7-8 hours a day while he's hungover. That is what I am in awe of. I can drink, right? I don't drink on weeknights, though. And if I do, my day starts at 9 a.m. I work from home, so I roll out of bed at 8:45, open up my laptop. And if I drink the night before, that hangover, it's hard to get through the day. And that's me in my bedroom in a comfy chair just... While this guy is waking up 5 hours before I do, or maybe 4 hours before I do, he has to work outside with a sledgehammer, and he's able to do that while hungover every day. And the guys, the Americans who would go into this guy's grandfather that would go into the coal mines of West Virginia in the early 1900s, they do that every day with a hangover. That is a blue-collar American. That is somebody I admire. Now, what I don't admire is that you have kids. This is where the dark side of alcohol, the dark side of adulthood, where I'll be at the package store getting whatever I'm getting, again, usually Busch Light, because that's my favorite of the cheap beers, and you'll see The guy come in 4 p.m. Not always blue collar, but let's say it's a blue collar guy. And you walk out together, like you're in line together. You walk out and you see his kids, young kids, in the passenger seat of his car. And I'm always like, oh, man, like you're going to get drunk in front of your kids. And they're only 4 or 5 years old. They're at that age where they still believe in Santa Claus and they have that smile on their face. And, it's the most pure thing on earth is a 4 or 5 year old. And you're going to get drunk in front of them and put yourself into a coma and black out and not remember what your kids are thinking. That's where you're at, right? You have 3 kids. And the problem for you is it's in your genetics. Like you said, your grandfather did this, but he did it responsibly. Right, if he did it, he would wait till the kids were to bed, then he would get drunk on his own. That's what you got to do. You got to wait till your kids are asleep before you hit the bottle. Like, I understand it. Your life is shit. You're working, you're blue collar. The job you don't love. Your wife, she's a brute. She's not even giving you hand jibbers anymore. She's a shitty cook. The steaks are always cooked too much. The last time you had a medium rare steak was the last time you went out to dinner, because your wife, she don't know how to make a medium rare steak, even though it's easier than making a well done steak. But yeah, your life is shit. Your kids, the weight of the world is on you. And what you have, and what we all get in adulthood, is you have perspective now. I remember somebody was talking about the movie The Breakfast Club, and they were bemoaning how they watched it as a kid. They loved the film. But then they watched it as an adult when they were an actual real parent, and they watched it and they were horrified because they were viewing it through the prism of the principal and the administrators, and they saw how rotten those teenagers were, and they just, it was perspective. They were viewing it from the adult's eyes, not the teenager's eyes. And that's what you have now. Like with me, when I was a child, I would look at my dad, and no vices at all for my dad. He didn't smoke. He hardly ever drank. The only vices he really ever had were Coca-Cola and maybe Lay's potato chip. But anyways, had 5 kids. He raised a family. I worked a corporate job, went every day, suit and tie. And as a kid, I was playing basketball. Like, oh, man, what a loser. Like, he's going to his corporate job. But the older I get, I'm like, wow. Each passing day and year, I think my admiration for my dad and my mom, it grows. And my brothers and sisters who have kids, because you realize how hard that lifestyle is, whatever the work it is, like they're doing it to provide a better life for their spouse and their kids. And especially when you have 5 kids, or in your case, 3, that's inspirational. Now, to getting drunk while you're home at night with them, that's not inspirational. So yeah, drink after they go to sleep. Try to wean off the alcohol, because even if you are hitting the bottle after the kids go to sleep, like, they're still going to know you're drinking. Like, they might not know now, but they'll put the puzzle together, because they don't know what alcohol, like the smell of it. But when they get older and start drinking vodka, like, wait, that smells like my dad. And then like, oh, my dad was a drunk. So you don't want that. So I think try to find another vice. Try to cut back the alcohol to every other day and slowly wean off it. And maybe take up edging, right? Right? There's no scent to the breath when it comes to edging. So do edging or playing video games or some type of vice where you don't end up like your grandfather, where you end up with an early death. And because, you want to raise those grandkids that you'll have one day, or apparently so. Well, good job, B-Man. That was some very, very in-depth analysis. Now, with that out of the way, let's go to our final segment of episode 88, which is we're going to continue reading. Read along. The Salesman's Wife by John Lawrence. Again, we read 2 pages together every episode. Where are we? Ooh. Okay, last 2 pages of chapter 2, top of page 43, if you are reading along. Pamela, in her drugged state, writhed sensually as his fingers glided like feathers over her breast. Her skin tingled with warmth and pleasure and began to knead the cream white mounds of mounting desire. Oh, she moaned involuntarily. Feels nice to be loved, doesn't it? He whispered as he gripped the subtle flesh. You deserve to be loved. Let yourself be loved. Oh, yes, she sighed, wriggling happily. Carlsberg positioned himself again, spreading her legs apart and kneeling up between them. As he did, Pamela suddenly sat up, terrified. No, she said. What are you doing? Are you afraid again? He said sharply. Afraid? Afraid of love? Afraid to surrender to the power of love? Suddenly, he took her face in his hands and kissed her passionately. Pamela thought she would swoon from the intensity of it. It was all that was needed to banish her anxiety. She was lost in his kiss, overwhelmed by his powerful presence. And once again, the drug clouded her mind with euphoric delight. Carlsberg, sensing she was his again, eased her back on the couch. She offered no resistance now as he let his hands rove over her curving white hips and down her long, silky legs. Then, after pausing for a while to stroke her small, delicate feet, his hands traveled back up her legs, up towards the soft pussy flesh nestled in her ebony triangle, up toward the trembling cunt. His palms rested on the inside of her naked thighs, and he slowly parted her legs, further to reveal the naked cuntal slit completely, then lowered her face down towards the cringing cunt. Pamela gasped as Carlsberg snaked his tongue out and licked her vaginal clit lightly. A voice cried out within her to leave, to run away, but she forced herself to relax. I mustn't be afraid. I mustn't. I mustn't. Suddenly, a tremor of excitement shot through her as Carlsberg buried his face in her wet, tender, cuntal flesh. Her entire being was bursting with pleasure. She was delighted and gave herself completely to his hotly questing mouth. That's the end of chapter 2. Go suck a fat one.